All right, good morning, everybody. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for this Tuesday, August 22nd, 2017, and ask for everybody to please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you guys so much, and good morning again. First item on our agenda, as always, is public comment number one. It's an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda, or if you got any other comments you want to make, now's a great time to do that. And if you so desire, please come right on up to the microphone. Yeah, Arden, come on up. I couldn't imagine, Arden, that you were here and you weren't going to want to comment. Start by introducing yourself.
Please. Yeah, Arden Griner, Sherman Township. Did this letter go out to all the township trustees?
Leanne Harder, can you answer that question for us?
I know in the past it did.
Yep.
Well, I talked to one, but then yes.
No, in this case it did. It went to, in the past years when we've added new taxable properties, it's in essence included every township in Story County. This time we didn't add any taxable properties, so the practice is to go to those township trustees, those taxing entities in total that are part of the properties that are part of the urban renewal area. So no, I have a listing in the resolution of the township trustees that did receive it.
Okay.
But you received a copy because you did write the letter.
Yeah. Well, how many letters were sent out?
I'll have to go back and look.
Okay.
So, Leanne, would you get that information for Arden, and then let's get it on next week's agenda so that everybody has the same information.
And this one's a little bit unique in that it actually crossed into Boone County, too, and we have township trustees. And
I got actually got some calls from Boone County.
Yeah. But so the practice has been, if taxable properties are added, obviously those include the wind turbines, too, and that's been the practice. So this is a little bit different year because no taxable properties are added.
Okay.
Good. Anything else? Nope.
I just wanted to add.
And let's be real careful. We can't do anything with this since it's not on our agenda.
I understand that.
Okay.
This is just a clarification question. Practice meaning what we have been doing as opposed to what is legally required. Correct.
Right.
Thank you. That's all I wanted to say.
Perfect. Thank you. And Leanne, you'll get something on next week's agenda where we could actually discuss this if we so desire. Perfect. Thanks. Anybody else wishing to comment on anything? All right. First item is discussion and consideration of cost for nonprofit agencies occupying space in the Human Services Center. Carla, Gene Cressy, Kim, are you coming up?
Sure.
You guys start by introducing yourself, but I'll start by kind of teeing it up. So we've had a conversation several weeks ago, I believe it was several weeks ago, about the possibility of United Way and Raising Readers utilizing some space in the back of community services that we're not utilizing anymore, and what it might look like if we were to enter into that agreement. At that time, you guys were charged with working with Cal Pearson, our director of facilities, to come up with some options for the board to consider that might work for United Way and Raising Readers, and that brings us back to today.
You bet. Thank you. Carla Webb with Community Services.
Jeannie Cressy with United Way of Story County.
Kim Hanna, Raising Readers in Story County.
Okay, so we did meet with Cal and submitted for you a couple of scenarios that we'd like to propose. We looked at the first scenario, which would be just two employees occupying space. And so we identified the cubicles that they would be interested in. We looked at common areas that employees only use, and then also identified our kitchenette area in the community services office as a space that the employees would use. And then we also broke it out there, identifying common areas for public use. And then Cal worked on coming up with the square footage suggested cost by dividing that out. So the cubicles in the kitchenette, we looked at that in community services space, divided that by three entities, three users. So community services, Veterans Affairs, United Way, Raising Readers as one. So came up with $4 per square foot there. The common areas for all that all employees use, we divided that by eight users. so 8 different offices within the Human Services building to come up with $1.50 per square foot. And then we're proposing the common areas that the public has access to as being an in-kind from the board, so no charge for that space. So that would be scenario number one. That comes down to $158.37 per month cost. The second scenario, same concept. If all of the Raising Readers employees were to come over, we'd be looking at a total of 6 employees. So the 2 that would be included in scenario 1 plus 4 additional. So with that, we had addition of office space as well as additional cubicles, 6 additional cubicles. And then also looking at storage space that's up on the second floor that's currently being used by facilities management, would look at sharing that storage space with Raising Readers. So divided that square footage space out by 2 to come up with $6 a square foot. Again, common areas that the public use, we look at that as an in-kind and no charge there. So that total would be $512 per month and 5 cents, if that were to be the option that's used or looked at.
And so it all looks really, really good to me for us to talk through what makes the most sense for United Way and Raising Readers. The one question that I have before we get into that conversation is that when you look at what we're charging for dedicated office space and things like that, I struggle with the $6 a foot on storage. So can somebody, and Cal, maybe I'm asking you this question, it seems like that $6 a foot for what in essence is a old vacant conference room that I think, as I recall, last time I looked in there, it's only partially full anyway. I'm struggling with $6 a foot there. Talk me through that.
Well, we just followed the same baseline with occupants in the area. And since it was just us using it at this time, and then them coming in to share that with us is how we come up with that. Just that, two occupants.
Absolutely. And what you're using in there right now, do you have plenty of space? And if they were to take out this portion of it, would it cause you any hardship for what you're storing over there?
I think there'll be enough room for both of us. But, you know, storage is a valuable commodity in that building.
Yep.
We don't have a lot of it. So I would really like to share that with them.
Absolutely. And that closet down the hall from where you're talking about, that is it DCAT uses that, right? What do we don't charge them anything, right? We've just given them the or provided the office space and that whole storage area?
I don't think that's correct, Rick. I think that's figured in on the DHS costs.
Okay.
When we measure that out for them. So that's at $12 a square foot, all of their
$12.
Yeah, nothing is higher or lower if it's storage or actual office space, so it's just a flat fee for them.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so I'd like to hear what you guys think. You've been through this, and what works for you, and what would you ask us to consider?
Well, I'll speak first as far as the scenario one, because that would be a contract that United Way would hold. So even though it's a Raising Readers employee, it's under the anonymous donor grant that we have for the grade level reading campaign. And I tease Cal because he has 2 huge garages in that building that certainly he had lots of space. But number one, I just appreciate it so much. And I thank the whole entire team that worked with us to come to this arrangement, because for the grant and for United Way, this is doable. So we're very excited for it.
And I would say the same for Raising Readers in Story County. If you saw where we were currently, you would understand why we need to expand our area as we bring in another staff person at the end of the month. We are always looking for more storage, because we are always bringing in more books that need to be stored and distributed out. So whether we stay with the storage or we rent storage, that's a cost that we'll have to have either way. It's much more user-friendly for us to have it in the same building, so we can make that work as well.
Have you looked at this storage area, Cam?
I have, yes.
Would everything you foresee on a going forward basis that where your program fit there?
No, but it doesn't fit anywhere we have it currently. So we have storage in four different places right now. So.
I see.
One thing we talked about doing, too, was utilizing a couple of the cubicles mm-hmm. For storage space. So that would be factored in here.
Mm-hmm.
But that the VA is doing that somewhere right now, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. They're using the office, the 011C, as storage. So we'll have to move those things into to cubicle as well as raising readers using a couple of cubicles mm-hmm. For storage.
Super. Laura, questions?
My question is about our leases in general, so maybe for Cal here, but I know you talked about a 3-year lease, correct? No?
My understanding was that we were going to look at this from year to year, but we would have a year lease, and then we would get enough heads up that we wouldn't be on the streets in 2 weeks or
so. So I think I'm the one who was uncomfortable with a 3-year lease, just because we don't know what's coming down the road. But I think what we talked about at that point, Laura, is you'd always have a year notice. We
were
moving slow enough that if we needed the space back, we would have time to make that.
Actually, that's where I was, except from your viewpoint about when you grew again and needed to go again. So, okay, thank you for reminding me about that.
Okay.
That was my only question.
Yeah. And I will say that this is a very transitionary space for us because we are in the process of looking for more permanent space. We just can't be in our current space.
Thank you.
Super.
In addition to the space costs, we're also looking at phone costs in that. We had included some information on that from IT. Since this morning I received some updated information on item number one, well, option one, item one, the 8-port switch of $900. It looks like Orion would include that in their overall service, so it would be a monthly charge, so that $900 cost is going to actually get rolled into the ongoing monthly cost. And I think we need to have some further conversations regarding the phone to know if it's going to be, if this would be a scenario that both agencies would want to go with or not, because the costs, I think, are maybe higher than what they'd be able to afford.
Absolutely, but that would be entirely up to the agencies to figure out how they're, whether they use our phone service or somebody else's, you're just paying for what you use, however you get that done.
Correct.
And the installation and all of that.
Yes.
All right, so then for me, unless there's any other questions, this is time for consideration. I'm still struggling with the storage space. I'd like to see us, so we've got a couple areas that we are just providing, mainly the hardcore public areas. But so I don't like the idea of us charging raising readers to store books that we're counting on getting into the hands of our young people in Story County. I'd like to see us recognize that Cal needs his share of the space in that room, because it helps him serve that building. But the space that's not being utilized, I'd like for us to allow raising readers to use it at no charge. Thoughts?
I think that that's fair in this unique situation. And I think, Rick, you said it when you said about, I mean, we're just, that's a temporary storage place. Those books are moving in and they're moving out pretty rapidly, as I seem to recall. So I think that I'm comfortable with us foregoing the charge for the storage space.
Marty, you got thoughts on that?
So listen, if this storage space is used by Kim and her program, that's not going to come as hardship to you over there at that building, Cal?
No, not really.
Then I don't have a problem giving it to her. I agree. The logic has just stated here is the fact that we know we're probably looking at a transitional presence. Mm-hmm. We have a program worthy of bringing in and supporting. I think the public is well served that if we can do this at small to no cost, we should do it.
So by my math, that takes the annual rent from $6,144.50 down to $5,064.50 if we remove the $1,080, which, again, by my quick chicken-scratching math, means it's about $422.04 a month. So I'd throw it back to Gene and Kim. Is that what you guys would be looking for, and is that workable for what you're trying to get done?
I think that's very workable.
Okay.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So, board, no motion's been made. It takes a motion from us to make this happen.
So the math on that again was, I'm sorry, I didn't follow you.
Okay, so it's $6,144.50 annually, including the storage space at $1,080, and we're talking about absorbing that $1,080, which again, by my math, takes it down to $5,064.50 annually, which divided by 12, again, by my math, is $422.04 per month.
I would make a motion that we enter into this rental agreement with United Way. And is that who it would be, or with both of you? No.
Scenario one would be United Way.
Okay.
Scenario two would be Raising Readers.
I'll go with scenario two. So enter in with Raising Readers for the gross amount per year of $5,064. No sense. And which works out monthly to $422. Is that correct? $422 a month.
Second. Motion second. Just to make sure we're clear, if this motion passes, it would go to Ethan Anderson, our civil attorney, to work with all the groups to get the language in as we've stated all the way through this thing. That would be our next step.
I would so amend that this proposed lease be referred to our civil attorney.
Yeah, Carla.
We were just trying to figure out here if we would need to have two leases for scenario number two, one with Raising Readers and one with United Way. So,
And maybe I'm not reading this right.
It is in this.
Scenario one is in scenario two?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
So can United Way reimburse Raising Readers would be the question?
Yes.
And that way we're just in one lease with Raising Readers.
Yes. I'm sorry. I misunderstood that.
It's as I see it, and we'll see what Ethan's up writing, it's a no real term, but there's always a year notice from Story County if we need them to move out. Okay. So they always know where they are for the next 12 months.
Perfect.
Right. And that's for Ethan to work out. It'll still have to come back to us to approve anything.
Okay.
This is just moving it down the road.
Okay.
And the phone details that they will respectively work out with Cal.
We're not paying anything for phones. That's on them. If they want to work with us, that's fine. But you're just paying what the real cost is. If you want to do it on your own, that's fine. You've got to work with Cal to let people in the building, and that, again, that's your cost.
Sure.
Everybody good? We got a motion and a second. Further discussion? Further discussion? Anything to add? Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It's approved at $422 a month. Thank you.
Thank you.
How soon do you think you're going to be in?
Tomorrow.
One thing I did ask. Tomorrow. Okay, thank you.
I have had conversations with Ethan about this, so alerted him that he may need to be working on a lease, so I'll follow up with him next on that. His suggestion was that we have the entities, their legal look at the lease, and then once that's passed through them, we would bring it for your review. Does that sound all right?
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Good
job, Carla, as always. Agency reports. Now we get to hear from our friend Jerome Rewerts on juvenile court services. Jerome, it's always a good day when you come over here.
Hi. Thank you.
Good morning, Jerome.
Good morning. As I reported, we've been doing a lot of training. We had two of our juvenile court officers from Story County do a week-long training in EPICS. It's the new kind of buzzword around the state for the way that we handle our meetings with our kids and our interactions with them. It's an intervention skill-building session. We're helping kids think through their process of why they're doing things against the law, and we're helping them build skills to just do little things like say no to doing something to get them in trouble, or handling peer pressure, or saying the appropriate ways to apologize and so forth. We also invited a few of the county attorney office people to participate in our bias training. The Judicial Department put that on. It's refraining from discrimination. We all have biases. Being aware of what your biases may be kind of helps us make better decisions. just like the adult correction facilities. We put more black young men in our detention facilities and in placements than we should, just if you look at the numbers. We also had some training by Disability Rights Iowa. They presented us with the education, the rights that kids have with education in our community schools when you have a disability. And specifically, they went into the rights that our disability kids that we work with, what their rights are in group care and at the state training school. Again, with educational concerns, and then, of course, at the state training school, as you've read in recent papers about restraining young men and young women. Then we continue to partner with Story County on truancy. We're working with the county attorney's office to try to get some kids to the forefront where we address this issue, address the barriers of why kids may or may not be attending regularly, and seeing if we can help that process before it gets overwhelming.
And I'm so appreciative that you guys are involved. I know that I believe the county has helped with some of the mileage or something associated with your involvement in that. I just want to say this. So I've heard from multiple school systems in Story County who are absolutely thrilled with the county attorney's office and the foresight that our county attorney's taken in dealing with this. I'm sure you're hearing the same kind of things, but I think it's important. Anytime Story County is a model for something positive, I think it's important to note it. And I think this is one of those areas.
And I think we're doing a nice job. As I reported, we've had six of the mediation meetings, and we've peppered that throughout five different school districts.
Are you noticing any common factors?
I think the common factors would be transportation, parents' ability to maybe their work schedule, maybe their not working, maybe they don't have the finances. That would probably be a commonality.
Okay, thanks.
Because it does come up from time to time in private conversation and here now, could you explain electronic monitoring as it's done by your office and who's watching and how often it is? Just to educate me, please.
Sure. So we used to use a radio type of electronic monitoring where they wore a bracelet and it radioed to a home box that was hooked up to a landline. You used to always have to have a landline. And it basically told us when the youth was leaving the residence, it was 50 feet, 100 feet, or 150 feet from that radioed box. And it let us know when they came in. Well, everything gets better in age. And now we use GPS. So a GPS monitor, you can have something at their home. You cannot use something at their home to help monitor when they're home or the unit's not working as often. It just kind of shuts off and it goes to that other unit. But the GPS, it's remarkable. Anytime I can get on a computer and I can pinpoint where a youth would be by the number of satellites that are registering, if there's 9 or 8 satellites, it's the size of this table is the general area that they're in. If it's 11 or 12 satellites, it's the size of a basketball. So it really lets us know where they are. It also allows any type of tampering with the device. If the battery is low or becoming low and needs to be recharged, we get notifications through email if there's some sort of foul play or something that doesn't look right.
So this is something you individually as a JCO monitor?
Yes, and as in Story County, we work together as a team. We all have different kids on GPS units at different times. And if I'm jumping on and looking at mine, I'm going to look at my colleagues as well, and they return the favor. We also are allowed to send messages to the children. I can either request a phone call. I can request that they charge their battery, a general reminder, And there's a couple other messages, but usually we can send a message, hey, please call me when you have a chance.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Other questions?
None.
Oh, thank you.
Jerome, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, next is consideration of minutes from the 15th.
I would move that we approve them as presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any notations?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes passed. No personnel actions today. Consideration of claims.
No consideration of claims as presented.
I would second.
Chitty?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda board. Anything to remove? If not, I'd take a motion.
I will move that we approve as presented.
Second.
Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. Public hearing items, two of them today, board. This is our second consideration of Ordinance 262. Amelia. Hi, Amelia.
Hello. You heard the first consideration at your last meeting, and you voted to approve the first consideration and put the second consideration on today's date. I can go through the presentation or answer any questions.
Any comments? Any public comments? Is there anything different from what you went through a week ago?
Nope, we received no additional public comments.
Board, do you need to hear the presentation again? Or are we still good?
We are good.
Okay. Oh, we are good.
This okay. is one that we talked about considering waiving the third and final. I would just add, if we're going to go to a public hearing first, but when we get there, just keep in mind that we were going to talk that through. Anything further? Anything from the applicant before we open the public hearing?
No, sir.
All right. So in that case, we'll open the public hearing. Anyone wishing to address Ordinance 262 dealing with the Donaldson zoning request, please come right on up. And seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for action.
I would move consideration of Ordinance 262 as presented with a waiver of the third hearing.
I would second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion.
Nothing.
Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It passes, and third and final reading is waived, making Ordinance 262 in effect. Congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, good job, Amelia.
You guys have been patient for all of this.
Thank you.
No. Good luck with this. Next public hearing item is discussion and consideration of Resolution 1827, amending the urban renewal plan of Story County.
Morning, Leanne.
Leanne Harder. Hi, Leanne.
Good morning. Bear with me while I wake up the sleeping computer. Okay, this presentation I have to share this morning should look very similar. It's essentially the same one that I shared as we started to kick off this discussion a couple months ago. I'm going to review the proposed 2017 projects and then have some proposed changes for your consideration. And again, as was noted on the agenda, this is a public hearing. You all know the types of projects that are eligible, but just a reminder, there are four areas: transportation infrastructure enhancement, second is public land and trail improvement, the third is communication utility infrastructure expansion, and the last is Main Street and town center revitalization, and that seems to be where the majority of the projects this year do lie. Again, from our objectives and goals, objectives and strategies, with economic development policies, the TIF funds will not be used to participate in direct disbursement or rebate to private entity, and it is the expectation is that applicants identify a minimum 25% match. The proposed amendments to Urban Renewal Area Plan include four areas, Section 2 and Section 5, both as the specific four projects that were brought forward through our application review, that be from the City of Gilbert, City of Cambridge, City of Slater, and then City of Story City. And then Section 8 is our county financial information. And then Exhibit B, again, is similar to the first two changes, which are the mapping and the legend to add the projects. This is a summary of the awards since 2013 when the program first was initiated. The amounts in red on the right-hand side of the screen for the four specific jurisdictions are those requests that have been brought, are the total requests if these projects are funded for that particular jurisdiction. The requested amounts are in the column second to the right. Total requests are $273,350 for this program cycle. The deadline that the board approved under which we've been operating as staff is on the screen. We're at the last section. So we are at the public hearing section. We followed the schedule as published. And we are proposing to hold a public hearing today in accordance to Chapter 403 of the Code of Iowa. Staff does recommend following the public hearing approval resolution number 18-27, amending the urban renewal plan, Story County urban renewal area, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Question for her before we get to the public hearing.
None. I think she did a very fine job of presenting the obvious here because it's very well laid out. It's, we have been touching on this through the summer, so nothing new there.
I agree with everything Marty said.
Outstanding. All right, so we'll open the public hearing and ask if there is anyone who would like to address Resolution 1827, amending our urban renewal plan. And seeing no one moving to the microphone, I'll turn to the board for action.
I would move Resolution 1827 as presented to amend the urban renewal plan.
We got a motion and a second. Further discussion? Anything to note on this?
I would like to note that I did receive comments from Arden Greiner. He was here earlier today, but has left. Okay. He did, of course, express his wish that we did not do this and gave some pointers that he has pointed out in previous meetings regarding what he believes is a more effective use of the monies should it stay available for various entities' general funds.
Yeah. And I'll just say this about Arden. So Arden has been consistent throughout this entire process for years on his feelings on TIF. He does not believe that TIF is an appropriate tool at any time, and he especially believes that when it involves the wind towers. And like I say, he's been really consistent all the way through, and it's completely appropriate for you to share his thoughts. Anything else? Let's see. So we've got a motion and a second. Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Resolution 1827 passes. Thanks, Leanne. Next is discussion consideration regarding Story County's participation in the 2020 Census local update of census addresses. Leanne, Jerry, maybe Deb at some point. Take us through what's going on here.
I tried to leave and Jerry reminded me of
that. I saw you trying to slip away and I had to look at my agenda again. Yeah. I thought, God, did I skip something?
I have just a few slides to run through that will give some of the background information to the agenda item. It's a little bit more broad than just the LUCA, the local updated census addresses operation. It will include the boundary annexation survey, the BAS, and I'll get to that shortly. But it's hard to believe, but the 2020 census is actually right around the corner. The United States Census Bureau is beginning to send out the requests for participants, and I'm going to run through what some of the requests do include. This is a time frame that the U.S. Census has put in one of their U.S. Census Bureau has put in one of their flyers and promotional materials. It just really does show how this is a kicks off in 2017 and continues on through 2021. Time frame is pretty similar to what we've done the past few years or past few census cycles. It's not just you get to 2020 and you do everything at that point. There's ramping up and then there's post-validation of the information that's collected as well that with which the local jurisdictions are involved. There are two main programs that Story County may participate in if so desired. The BAS, which as I stated earlier, is the Boundary Annexation Survey. And then LUCA, Local Updated Census Addresses and Census Addresses Operation. I'm going to just say BAS and LUCA. It's a mouthful. This was a summary from the U.S. Census website, what the BAS is, but it just simply is the ability of local jurisdictions to share the most current annexation, street configurations, all the information we have that's very important to our boundaries and our redistricting efforts, everything that we do with real estate, to share that with U.S. Census to make sure that when they go out and do the decennial census, it's current, it's accurate. We have such a robust GIS and real estate system that this has actually become fairly easy to do. I say fairly easy, it's still labor and time intensive. But compared to when we had paper maps in 2000, this has become enormously more simplified. Then through that, we have the ability to do county consolidation agreements. And what this simply is Story County acting on behalf of all their jurisdictions in Story County. Rather than Story County and the 15 municipalities, including Sheldahl, even though Polk County is controlling jurisdiction, rather than 16 different entities submitting information as one entity, Story County is the recording of the real estate records through the county auditor's office, and we manage the GIS system, so it makes sense for a county consolidation agreement to go forward. I did look this morning because I want to make sure I have the most up-to-date information from the U.S. Census Bureau. At this time, three counties have registered to do county consolidations. That's Grundy, Henry, and Boone counties. The deadline for this is coming up very soon. It was originally August 1st. They have extended out to September 1st. I have a feeling my past work with the census will, it's kind of a soft September 1st. It'll probably be October 1st, then December 1st. I think their idea is they'd like to see as many of 99 counties participate. It does make their jobs a lot easier as well when you're looking at the census, trying to coordinate with all these different entities. This is the screenshot of the fillable forms, which is very nice, that Story County would submit on behalf of Story County and the jurisdictions if we were going to pursue the county consolidation agreement. That's kind of an interesting title, too. I don't even think that we're consolidating into one entity, just simply for the information data. But it does include the middle part under Section 1 is Story County's information, and then Section 2 is a participant roster, participation roster. That's where all the jurisdictions' information goes in. And then, switching gears to LUCA, that is an opportunity for local, and it's a one-shot deal. One-shot deal, but we can continue to supplement the data as needed. It's kind of like working with floodplain maps. It is the opportunity for us to provide all the addresses that we have in our system. Our GIS and real estate system is so robust that we have the information that we can easily disseminate and send to the census in the format that is easiest for them to use, that they use that then to go out with the pollers to figure out, to actually conduct the actual census. It's very important that we do that because it's an opportunity to make sure we have all the up-to-date addresses. We know when residential subdivisions have occurred, whether it's in or outside city limits, again, knowing that the auditor's office is the custodian of all those records. Any questions thus far on those two programs?
Why would any of our municipalities not want us to be the coordinating factor, if you can kind of look into their minds?
Can I hold that question for a slide?
You may.
Because it's going to be interesting. And I think it might be the next slide.
Okay, thank you, Lee.
It is the next slide. Oh, no, there's a couple more.
Okay.
Because that's a kind of question. This is just a map of those counties in Iowa that have already signed up to do the LUCA. And again, this is constantly evolving. LUCA is actually through December, I think, is our opportunity to sign up, December 15th. For some reason, I have that date. The registration forms are pretty simple, again, all fillable online, which if anyone has ever dealt with paper census maps, Paperwork Reduction Act and the census, really, they took that to heart several years ago. It really is much more friendly. That's not correct grammatically, much friendlier. The response says, yes, we're doing it, no, we're not. And then under that no, another level of government, So that's where a jurisdiction, one of our cities would submit that. I did have a chance to talk to Sonia in the audience. Gilbert has already, they're ahead of us. They've already sent in their form that they would do this on their own. But I did talk to her briefly in the audience, and she said she'd be okay with Story County doing it on her behalf. Getting to your question, Loris, I don't know why they wouldn't, except for maybe our larger communities, to make sure that they have ability, like Ames, the ability to send in information, although we're all pulling from the same information. That's what's really interesting about Story County's GIS makeup. We all share the basic parcel data and address data. And that gets to one of the recommendations I have later on.
Okay.
Then this liaison information on the form is actually needed too, and I'll talk about this in the considerations slide that is next. So the first questions and considerations for the board this morning: does Story County want to participate in LUCA and BAS? And if yes, are you representing only unincorporated areas, or do you want to reach out to all the all the other affected jurisdictions? And if no, you don't want to participate in either of those, or in either LUCA or BAS. We do need to reply to the U.S. Census and give such direction to the staff to reply. And then who is that designated LUCA liaison if we are participating? They want the staff, an individual member, and whether that's Rick as the chair, whatever, that's where the majority information is sent, distributed. So the recommendations, based on those considerations, we participate. We also reach out to all the jurisdictions in Story County to do the county consolidation agreements for the BAS, and then that LUCA form to say all the local jurisdictions say no, and Story County act on their behalf. The BAS is really around the corner. It's September 1st. Again, I think that's kind of a soft date, and we could contact the contact census, and they understand that we are working on it. It's to their benefit to have these agreements come in. LUCA is December 15th. Part of that, you do need to identify a LUCA liaison. And then we spoke yesterday. There's a great merit in establishing a 2020 census working group. It would be Deb Schildroth, Jerry Moore, Matt Voigt, myself, and then representative of the auditor's office.
If the auditor so chooses.
Yeah, exactly. And then we felt it necessary to identify a department, though, that would facilitate the review and necessary revisions to the, even though they're digital, that is time-consuming, the maps and the necessary review. And that would be Planning and Development Department. Oh, that's next time. With that, we'll be glad to answer any questions. I knew I threw out a lot at you. I did find this morning some the mailing that Story County received was not 100% complete. And so I did find online an ability to open up a file that they sent and unzip it. So that is the packet of materials you have, and I gave Jerry and Deb one too. My apologies, I just found that this morning. So that's on everyone's desk, and Shelley, you have a copy of it as well.
And so, Leanne, in 2010, Story County took this on for all of our, we had the entire county except for one municipality, our largest municipality did it on their own. And that was, at that time, it was all run through what was then called planning and zoning. You believe what you're proposing here makes more sense, having the work group still filtering a lot of the day-to-day tasks through planning and development, but having that work group really facilitating getting everything done. And who in you guys' mind makes sense as our LUCA liaison? Is it the chair of the board? Is it somebody from the work group? What makes the most sense?
I would gladly volunteer for that.
Unless
Leanne sees it otherwise.
No, I think that'd be appropriate, especially if the majority of the work product is coming through planning and development. It's, as it said, it's person responsible, protected, confidential Census Bureau materials covered by Title 13 U.S. Code. When we delve further deep into this, the census materials will have to be stored on an external hard drive. There are confidentiality requirements we have to abide by, or else we're actually, it's some federal penalties that we don't want to, we need to take this seriously. Any paper copies have to be stored in a locked file cabinet. And so it's just one individual, and if it's I think that it would be appropriate that be Jerry, since the materials will be housed down there as well, since they're being the worker bees.
Okay. Board, do you have enough information? Do you have any questions, first of all?
I guess I would start where Leanne started. In fact, I can't believe you're talking about the 2020 census, but here we are. Thank you, Jerry, for wanting to take this experiment. Yeah. This one, I think it's pretty straightforward. I don't see why we would not offer the other entities in the county the opportunity for us to be.
We're the only geographic entity that's countywide.
There you go.
That's it.
That's
Leanne, when you said we, I assume you meant that you, Deb, Jerry, Matt had all talked about this working group, right?
Matt was not there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So,
and I was going to try and touch base with him this morning, but I didn't have a chance yet.
So, you know,
nor was
Matt,
a representative from the auditor's office.
Yeah.
Okay. My only caveat is please do reach out as soon as possible. We hate to assign somebody to a working group that they feel that they don't bring the skills in for the time.
Yeah, 100%, but so. Matt, this won't come as a shock.
I understand this won't come as a shock.
Matt was one of the CCs on the initial letter.
I saw that.
And he actually came to me, just on a side note, and said, what's this all about? Is it what we did? And I guess what we did. I never received my CC copy. So there was a lot of limitation of information that came from the Census Bureau, on the, which is why I think that September 1st date is probably a flexible date.
Got it. Okay. No, that was just it for me.
Yep. Good.
So we need to do it.
Anything further? If not, I'd take a motion.
Move consideration of Story County's participation in the 2020 census, local update of census addresses as presented.
Okay. I would second.
And let's also, as part of that motion, Marty, if you're okay, name Jerry as our LUCA liaison.
And Jerry Moore as our point contact.
I second that also.
Okay.
Two new questions.
Yep.
And then you're okay with staff going ahead and submitting all the forms on the board's behalf?
Yep.
It's all done online, is what I read today, is correct. So, I mean, we don't need any formal signatures from the chair. It's just filling in the fillable PDFs and submitting.
Yep. So I believe if this passes, we're counting on the working group to monitor everything, report back to the board if anything needs to be reported. And ultimately, the board's going to want, I mean, this is a couple years down the road, but the board's going to want as much of an update as we can get, understanding all the confidentiality. But I think this is one of those things that needs to, that's the reason we're establishing, or I believe we're going to establish this working group for you guys to handle. Good?
That's it.
Yes.
You moved it? Or he moved it? Mark, okay. Chitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes as presented. Jerry Moore is our LUCA liaison.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Next item is discussion consideration resolution 1824, Browns Acres Residential Parcel Subdivision.
Good morning, Emily.
Hi, good morning.
Hi there.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good.
Just go from that.
Okay, our first subdivision before you this morning is a request for a residential parcel subdivision. The applicants are Ryan and Bonnie Brown of 170th Street outside of Nevada. This property is located in Section 3 of Milford Township. So Section 3 is in the northern portion of Milford Township. It's about 3.5 miles south of Roland and about 5 miles northwest of Nevada. The surrounding zoning and land use is zoning is A1 zoning, completely surrounded by A1 zoning on all sides of the property. There are 5 parcels located within a 0.5 mile that have single family dwellings, and that does include the subject property. I have included the dates of the that the dwellings were built on this slide. The dwelling on the subject property was built in 1900, and there's properties from before that, or dwellings from before that time up to the 1990s in that area. So there are also 25 parcels within a half mile of the subject property that meet or exceed the 35-acre minimum for a single-family dwelling in the A1 district. There is approximately 5 acres of this property on the eastern half that is in alfalfa production, and this is anticipated to continue on a majority of that lot. So here's the subject property, which includes proposed lot 1 and proposed lot 2. It was split from the original quarter quarters in 2005 through a plat of survey, which created parcel A. Again, the dwelling on the subject was built in 1900. There are 9 agricultural buildings on the subject property as well, and those were built between 1900 and 1990. The existing dwelling and all of the existing agricultural buildings will be contained on proposed lot 1. So here's the proposed division. Proposed lot 1, again, the dwelling and all the agricultural buildings is 6.2 net acres, and proposed lot 2 is 3 net acres on the eastern side of the subject property. Here's the drawing of, or a slide of just showing the plat. Proposed lot 1 on the left and proposed lot 2 on the right. Here's some site photos. Here we're looking northeast at the subject property at proposed lot 1, looking down 170th Street to the east. Here's looking northwest at a portion of proposed lot 1 and the existing dwelling. Looking northwest at the agricultural buildings that are located on the east side of the dwelling. On proposed lot 1. Here's looking northeast at proposed lot 2, currently in alfalfa production. Here's looking southeast. There is a farmstead just south of the subject property, and looking east along 170th Street. Looking directly south, the property to the south is directly to the south of proposed lot 1 is in row crop production. Here's looking west along 170th Street, and then the agricultural structures that are located to the west of the dwelling on proposed lot 1. And here's just another image of that same area. So the applicable regulations for the residential parcel subdivision, again, it's for residential use. There's only 2 lots created. They are for a single-family dwelling. There must be an existing single-family dwelling or farmstead, which we have in this case. It needs to be in the A1 district, and the lots need to be at least 1 acre. There needs to be road frontage, and we cannot provide any variances to create this division. Just some comments from the interagency review team. There's an existing driveway, the Story County Engine, on proposed lot 2. It's a field entrance, and the Story County engineer is okay with this location. Planning and Development just had some basic questions for our presentation here. Comments from the public. We did send notice letters to owners within a quarter mile of the proposed Brown Acres residential parcel subdivision on August 17th. And we did receive 1 email yesterday from the property owner to the south who said there's no objection to the subdivision as long as it is for a dwelling. And they noted that they would not want an animal confinement built.
And the dwelling is the intent here,
right? Absolutely. Yep. So analysis, there are 5 existing single-family dwellings, including subject property, within a half mile, and therefore fits within the character of the area. 25 parcels could be built upon based on our land development regulations in the A1 district. Access to proposed lot 1 will remain where it is now, and proposed lot 2 does have frontage along 170th Street. Proposed lot 1 and 2 meet the minimum requirement of 1 net acre each. And the property is not located within the floodplain. So it is Planning and Development staff's recommendation that the board approve the Browns Acres residential parcel subdivision plat as proposed. And that is option number 1.
Board questions?
Very straightforward.
Yeah, definitely good job. So it's not a public hearing item, but is there anyone who would like to address us on resolution 1824 before we take action? Seeing no one?
I didn't have a question. Sure. Okay. And it was based upon the comment that you received, about not wanting a confinement operation. Mm-hmm. This is zoned Ag-1. Right?
Correct.
Okay. And they are putting a manufactured housing on it, correct? I think I saw that somewhere when
that
I read your opinion.
But that was in the next case.
Thank you. Okay, mm-hmm. Never mind.
The property owners are planning, at this point, as far as I know, to maintain ownership of proposal 2, mm-hmm. And they are planning to reside there.
Okay,
so,
thank you.
Yeah.
All right, I withdraw my question.
Okay.
Anything further? If not, I take a motion.
I move resolution 1824 for consideration of Brown Acres residential parcel as presented.
I second.
Motion second. Further discussion? Chidi?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. 1824 passes. Let's keep right on rolling, and now we're to 1825.
Okay. This is a request for a major subdivision, which would be Rolling Hills Plat 4. The applicant in this case is Jonathan Schroeder, who's an attorney at Davis Brown Law Firm, on behalf of the property owners, Mark and Lori Lingle, that reside on Rolling Hills Drive, north of Maxwell. This property is located in Section 15 of Indian Creek Township. This request is for a major subdivision plat to divide existing lot 2 of Rolling Hills Plat 3 once into two lots for an additional single-family dwelling. The purpose is to create a lot for a single-family dwelling for the property owner's parents. There is an alternative compliance for the access easement of this property, and I'll go over that in a minute. The reason we need to do a major subdivision here is because of a minor subdivision that was completed just a few years ago to create, which was the Plat 3 of the Rolling Hills subdivision. So that's the reason for the major subdivision, even though there are only two lots being created. The request before the Board of Supervisors today is to consider both the preliminary and final plats of this Rolling Hills Plat 4 as a letter of credit and development agreement will not be necessary because there's no road or drainage improvements being made. So again, we're in Indian Creek Township, about three-quarters of a mile north of the city of Maxwell. The subject property is zoned R1. That was rezoned from A1 in 1977. There is R2 zoning to the south. The subject property is here. R2 zoning to the south, as well as residential manufactured home zoning, and that was rezoned from A1 in 1974. There is AR zoning to the south as well, and that was rezoned from A1 in 2007. Oh, the property, the zoning to the north, west, and east of this property is A1. So within a quarter mile of this property, there are 17 single-family dwellings. There are 5 parcels that meet the 35-acre minimum in the A1 district for a single-family dwelling. Rolling Hills Plat 2 is located here, and then Rolling Hills Plat 3, of which Lot 2 is being proposed to be divided. Rolling Hills Plat 2 was subdivided in 1977. Again, the zoning rezoning took place in 1974. The current lot was created in 2013, again, through a minor subdivision. So here's the proposed subdivision, which is to divide Lot 2 into two lots for an additional single-family dwelling. Proposed Lot 1 to the north there would be 1.22 acres, and is north of the existing single-family dwelling. Proposed lot 2 is 10.54 acres and would contain the existing single-family dwelling. There is some floodplain on this property, but it's over on the western side. So just getting into the alternative compliance request, we did receive an alternative compliance request to our shared access easement regulation. And I will point out here that the shared access easement shall be parallel to the front lot line and shall not exceed 50 feet in width. So the applicant is proposing to have a shared driveway in this case. I guess I can just go to this slide. The length of the access easement would then be about 190 feet, just less than 200 feet, and would follow the existing driveway. Planning and development staff support this alternative compliance request. Due to the existing natural features and the site topography, a 50-foot easement would not be sufficient to reach the location of the building, the proposed building site. This alternative compliance request would minimize the access points to the Rolling Hills Drive right-of-way and reduce impervious surface on site, as well as preserving natural and existing natural resources. Here's some site photos. We're looking southeast for the subject property from the bottom of the gravel drive. Looking northeast toward the single-family dwelling and the shed on proposed lot 1. Looking northeast toward the wooded area, which is the northern border of this property, at proposed lot 1, where the single-family dwelling is proposed to be placed. Looking east for the garden and the adjacent property to the east, again, that is zoned A1. Looking east for the existing shed from the gravel drive to be located on proposed lot 2, the existing single-family dwelling. Looking southwest toward the dwelling and the proposed site of
You're standing where they're talking about putting the new place.
Yes, thank you. looking northwest for the wooded area, dividing the properties there, and then looking to the south at the larger open area on the lot. This is looking southwest down the gravel drive toward Rolling Hills Drive. And then looking at the properties to the north at the bottom of the gravel drive. So this property is designated as rural residential in our cornerstone to capstone comprehensive plan, future land use map, which encourages clustering of residential sites, minimizes conflict between uses, and provides adequate buffers to minimize conflicts. Those are some principles of that designation. The utility providers and related services on this property are indicated here. We did receive letters from the fire department and the Central Iowa Rural Water, indicating that they have capacity to serve another dwelling in this location. Major subdivisions, if it can't be submitted as an agricultural or residential parcel subdivision or a minor subdivision, it's required to be a major subdivision. Again, there's the preliminary plat requirement here, and so we're looking to really address both the preliminary and the final.
Right. So we're following the procedure, but we're trying to follow it in an expedited manner.
Correct. Yep. I do want to point out a comment from the Environmental Health Department, just indicating that there may be a need for the new septic system for proposed lot 1 to be located on proposed lot 2. because the property owners are at this time planning to retain ownership of both lots, they won't need a septic easement, but if they ever sell that, that's something to consider. And that's not necessarily going to happen, it's just a possibility.
Sure.
Something that would happen. So comments from the public, we sent out notification letters to property owners within a quarter mile. We also sent a public notice to the city of Maxwell. Two members of the public spoke on their concerns at the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting on earlier this month, and they had one individual had concerns regarding the contribution of this new property to pay for lake maintenance. It was recommended that they speak to the property owner since that's really a homeowners association.
Yeah. Do they have a homeowners association here? I mean, how are they now collecting money to take care of the lake?
Through that association, yes.
So hopefully that homeowners association addresses that.
Yep. And that's nothing that we can do. And then also, there was another individual that was asking about the view preservation and the protection of the natural resources and vegetation, which is not anticipated to be impacted.
I mean, what they're talking about right now, it doesn't look like any substantial number of trees coming out, if any.
Correct.
And it's kind of a grassy area right now where they're talking about putting this, right?
Yep. So, the city of Maxwell, the city council did vote to waive their right to review the plat at their August 9th council meeting. So, just some highlights. The purpose of the subdivision is to create a lot for a single family dwelling to accommodate the applicant's parents. The major subdivision is required due to a previous minor subdivision in 2013. All bulk requirements for the R1 transitional residential district will be met. The request for alternative compliance, again, is that length of the access easement. Staff does support this alternative compliance request. And the natural area, the wood buffer that separates the property to the north and to both that one, is anticipated to remain as is. So the Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of the major subdivision preliminary plat of the Rolling Hills Plat 4 with the alternative compliance request at their meeting on August 2nd. Planning and Development staff again request that the Board of Supervisors take action on both the major subdivision preliminary and final plats today at your meeting. So that would be alternative number one.
Super. Thanks, Emily. Any questions for Emily?
Another good job, President.
Absolutely. Solid. Again, this is not a public hearing, but if there's anyone here who'd like to address this before the board takes action, just come right on up, ma'am. Take your time. And please start by introducing yourself.
My name is Mary Jo Wilson, and I live in that subdivision.
Yes, ma'am.
And I want to state off right at the beginning, I'm not against them building a home. But I think in our covenants, I think it says you can't put up a manufactured home. I don't know.
Yeah, and so...
And did you guys check that out?
So we did look at that. The original Rolling Hills plat 2, I guess, that original Rolling Hills subdivision did have that restriction.
Right.
Because it was replatted in Rolling Hills plat 3,
right.
The applicant's attorney made an opinion that those restrictions were no longer applicable to that property.
But that issue, if in fact it's an issue, would be between the property owner and the Homeowners Association.
Correct. Correct. Story County does not have any regulations.
And that's why we wouldn't be involved in that. That's between the Homeowner Association and the homeowner.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Was this brought out before planning and zoning? This issue here, did planning and zoning?
We talked about it during conceptual review.
Yeah, this is something that we've talked about before we got into it, before we actually distributed the materials to the other departments. So this is something that we want to be very clear on.
And be very clear on the fact that we have no role.
Right. That's a civil matter that would be between the Homeowner Association and the homeowner. County doesn't have a role in that.
So for my own edification here, but yet the attorney, when this was originally divided, the attorney did make comment on it. Is that in our official documents? I'm just trying to figure out about why the attorney would have even done
that. Not the county attorney. The attorney for the landowner.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And so I'm encouraging you to pursue that however you see fit. That's just between your homeowner association and this homeowner, and does not impact what the county's doing if they meet our other requirements.
Another question for our staff. The fact that it is a manufactured housing, manufactured house instead of a stick built attached permanently to the ground, that's okay to put on this particular type of zoning, correct?
It would just need to meet the definition of single family dwelling, and that would meet our requirements.
It will be located on probably a slab on grade foundation. Without a basement, but everything else, I believe it's wood built, stick built. It's just built in a controlled environment and then brought to the site rather than.
And put together piece by piece. Yes, ma'am.
Could I ask a question? I don't know the laws of the. But why would they. Could they have not put that dwelling on their property without dividing it?
Gary, you want to answer that one?
Our ordinances only permit one single dwelling per parcel, so this is currently the only way that this could be accomplished, to do this division.
Okay.
And as I understand it, what they're wanting, not that it matters to us, but they're wanting a spot for their parents to live,
mm-hmm.
correct?
For a family member. Yeah.
Okay.
And so what we've got now is we would have the same owner owning both lots. We would have a shared driveway, and in fact, we have septic systems that are crossing property lines without an easement, which we can't have if the property were ever owned by differing people. So this property is pretty tied together. Not that it's not untieable, but right now it's pretty tied together where the same owner needs to have both.
Okay.
We answer your questions?
Oh, I think so.
All right.
I think so.
Thank you, ma'am. Anybody else wishing to address us on this? Yes, ma'am. Come right up. And again, please start by introducing yourself.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Sherry Aldridge. I'm the property owner to the east of this proposed that is zoned in A1 agricultural. My only concern is the proximity of the proposed new dwelling to my existing livestock building.
Okay.
I have a barn that's would be right adjacent to that.
Emily, can you get us
from where they're
up?
Proposing that, and my concern would be future use or neighbors not liking the livestock, I guess you could say. If this property were ever to split and I have one more neighbor that might object to use of that in that way.
So this is a subject property here.
Yeah.
This is the Aldridge property here.
Absolutely. And it's an existing, ongoing operation that these owners know about as they're coming
yes,
in?
Yes, they should know about it. There are currently horses there. There's chickens there. I have had goats and have looked at pursuing getting a flock of sheep.
Yep. All within your rights. Thank you.
Yes.
And let's just make sure that these comments are noted just so that we can. Thank you very much. Anybody else wishing to address us on this topic? Yeah, Ryan, come on up.
It's real quick.
2 weeks in a row.
I know. I'm Ryan Holland with Davis Brown Law Firm, but a mere stand-in for Mr. Schroeder this morning. just two items. I agree with you, Rick, about the covenants. So I hesitate to even address it because I don't think it's all that pertinent. The covenants have expired, as my understanding would not apply to any of the parcels in any of the subdivisions at this point. This, as you all have probably seen before, sometimes developers who are lowercase d developers get a little excited about inclusion of property in a subdivision. This was actually vacated at some point, which again is why we're doing a major subdivision when all we really need to do is split one parcel into two to throw a house on top of it. So I don't think it's relevant, but from our opinion, those covenants don't exist for anybody at this point. I would be happy, and we would be happy to chat with you about whatever issues there may be. With regard to Ms. Olson, with regard to your question about manufactured home, I guess in this case it's more of a modular home. I don't believe there's any intent for it to be taxed as personal property. It's going to be residential real estate property taxes, so it's not going to be, you know, a camper being pulled up there or anything like that. And there is no easement. There's no plan for there need to be an easement, but rest assured, even if these folks were ever going to refinance, the lender is going to require that there be an easement there to make sure that their loan is secure and right, their collateral is secure. So I don't think there's anything that the county is going to do that would be any more restrictive than what any lender in the future would require, whether it be the easement, the access easement issue, or a cross easement for septic. So unless there are any other questions, that's
all. Thanks.
No, thank you.
Absolutely. Anything further before the board takes this matter under consideration? All right, so, board, consideration of 1825.
I would so move resolution 1825 with the major preliminary and final subdivision plat together and the alternative compliance request as submitted.
Second. Motion and second. Further discussion? Emily, good job. Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Both pass at once. Thank you, guys. And then no departmental reports today, so to other reports, review and receive, or even receive and review results from the 2017 Cornerstone to Capstone Survey.
Morning again.
Good morning again.
You didn't try to escape from this one.
No. There we go. The slide, wow, that is small to read. It should look familiar, though, to you. A month or so ago, I brought this schedule to the Board of Supervisors for review. We're actually at the period in time where we're doing our first annual review of the C2C plan, Cornerstone, Capstone. We are at the point now that I'm presenting the results of the survey that we did to the Board. We took the survey that was released in 2015. I do want to note a couple modifications were made, and that was in regards to attending meetings. We took those out. They were no longer applicable. We did release it. We did social media postings. We did a press release, which actually did get covered. Lots of different. We sent it to all the city halls, libraries, similar venues as we did last time, absent the public workshops. What I'm here today is giving you the results. Unfortunately, we only had 12 individuals that went in and started the survey. And as you go through the results, there's about 7 or 8 that actually answered each question. That being said, I did delve into it. For the most part, the answers are pretty similar. Directions are pretty similar. I'd be very concerned if even those 12 we had, or 7 or 8, we had a great divide in the responses from 2 years ago to now. And I made that clear when I brought the schedule that I showed previously to the Board. If we had, one, a great turnout, but even if we didn't have a great turnout, if we had that great divide of answers, I was going to recommend to the Board that we slow down the schedule. I don't have any degree of uncomfort, so I'm okay with the schedule coming forward, which I will address here shortly. But I do want, you know, we had seven that did go ahead and do the survey, seven or eight, depending on the question. We had three that said, I took the survey and I want to do it again, which kudos to them because this is a challenging survey. And I'll admit, I was not one of those three. I did take the survey in 2015. I did not this time, which I'm glad I didn't because it probably would really skew the answer. And then two that said, they did that first question, said, I took the survey, everything's good. That was when they were done. We said, thank you. Enjoy the next half an hour of your life that you'll not live. I mean, it does. I'm so appreciative of those that take time to do our surveys, whether in 2015 or today. As I said, sent to the city halls, libraries in paper format, did not receive a single one back. Rachel Wilson in the board's office did contact each one, and we don't have any paper copies. So this was solely using SurveyMonkey, the results. And I do want to know, I'll send a letter of gratitude to NSA in Ankeny, but they did this for us free. Next year or next time we want to do something, we'll probably have to talk about purchasing SurveyMonkey and that. But that was part of our negotiation with that work done for the C2C plan a couple of years ago. Now, going back 2 years ago, extremely different turnout. In June 2015, we did the survey. We had 674, nearly 700 people do the survey. Great response rate. It wasn't a statistically valid survey, or scientifically and statistically valid, because it was just a snapshot in time. But still, I was hoping at least for 50, so I'm very disappointed. We did extend out the time frame in a couple weeks to get people through vacation times. But I think really the sentiment is, it's our first year review. I mean, it has not shifted substantially. That being said, just a couple highlights. 2017 is on your left. 2015 is on your right. This is the quality of life question, or the three most important reasons you and your family choose to live and or work in Surrey County. Your job is the top one both years. The quality of public services rose up this year, as opposed to quality schools, which did decline, but again, keep in mind there are seven or eight respondents. So it might be a little bit skewed, a little bit. And then the small town rural atmosphere did reduce this time around, and others, it just wasn't a category that people chose this time around. But still, the near job does seem to be what factors that's driving people to locate in Story County. And then the other one, changes you think that would improve the quality of life in Story County. In 2015, expanding retail shopping options, improving recreational facilities, and improving bike and pedestrian facilities were the top three. This time around, it was increasing affordable housing, improving road infrastructure, and improving water quality, which are three messages that are actually pretty strong throughout the C2C plan. And I think this kind of goes to the point that C2C plan has been adopted, implemented with the implementation matrix. These are goals of the C2C plan. And to me, looking at these results, people are acknowledging that that's something that Story County needs to be working on, and we are making progress. Then how would you direct county civic leaders and planners with regard to land use policies and regulations? The numbers, percentages are pretty much aligned in this one. Be more restrictive, less flexibility for where and how land is to be used and developed. And really you see that with the C2C plan and amendments in play. And so the policies that are being reviewed by planning and development. And then back to the schedule. I am here today having you. Yeah, I did change the word. The wording, as Rick said, should be probably receive and review rather than review and receive.
Hard to review it before you receive it was my thought.
Well, yeah, but. I know what you're asking.
Yeah. It depends on if you review. Yeah, never mind. Getting toward lunchtime. Then as I said earlier, I don't have any inkling that we need to slow down the process. I think we can keep the time frame as originally established, except my understanding that we're possibly looking at a limited agenda on September 26th, which is when it was to be brought back to you guys. We'll push that back to October, and that is what happens. But you don't need official action amending. This is really just guiding staff. So with that, are there any questions? That's all I have.
Yeah, so I actually take, while disappointing that we only got 12 responses, and frankly, it's the five that filled out the survey the first time that then retook it would be the five that I would be most interested in seeing what kind of change we saw. But I actually take the fact that we only had 12 as a really, really good thing, because the reality is we're going to hear from the people who are unhappy about something. And the people that think we're moving along okay probably aren't going to take as much time to do this. So while you would have loved to have had 50, I actually take the fact that we only got 12, especially in the first year, as a good indicator that we've made some progress on some things and people aren't feeling an overwhelming sense of frustration that we spent all this time on the C2C and now we're not doing anything with it. So I take it as a good thing.
Yeah, I would like to see 50. Just I like to engage the public, make sure that, I mean, it's been 2 years, but the 2 years have gone so fast. But really, we've been working, marching ahead, implementation matrix, and getting things done. I mean, you can go through and check off things that have been accomplished that are that immediate term 3 to 5 year projects, and work programs are getting done and going forward.
Absolutely. But what this tells me is the fact that we only had 12, this turns into even more of a self-assessment of how we're doing rather than a full public assessment of how we're doing.
Which, when I come back to you starting in September, all of us have had a chance now to go through the implementation matrix, the goals, all of us being the project team,
right,
the staff members, to really do some reflections on where we are, where we're going, how we need to maybe change things because of other priorities. But I think we're finding, what I'm seeing from everyone submitting it, things are really looking good on what we're accomplishing. So there's a preview.
Good. Questions for Leanne? Comments? Leanne, thank you.
Oh, go ahead. Just disappointed as Leanne to see. I mean, it's quite, what was it, 77 pages?
Yeah, sure.
And you go through that, and it's just like, I would have thought somebody would have had more to say that. And Loris, I would ask you, you're the person that's out there as far as what do we do different to get more people to take this going forward. I mean, if Leanne reached out in both paper and electronic form, is there anything we're not doing?
Well, I think Rick has a good point here, is we've not, that what we've done so far seems to be right in line with the C2C, and I say we, I mean the county within the last 2 years, okay? And it's new, and we will certainly get more feedback the first time we address something where there is more, where there are differing opinions. The other thing that we can do is maybe we look at 3 or 4 years out, sit down and look at maybe trying to get into speak, have the Speakers Bureau activated again and get in front of some groups, okay, to, you know, like the Rotary and Kiwanis and maybe even some PTA groups or whatever. And that's a good way. Or go speak at school boards for 10 minutes and just get a little presentation together. Some people will actually be inspired enough to then go home and do it. Okay, some people, but that's, you know.
That might be a path forward to success. So we'll talk about that then.
Yeah.
Leanne, good job. We'll look forward to the next component of this.
Thank you.
And we both reviewed and received those results. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hemmer.
Public forum number two, an opportunity for members of the public to address topics not on today's agenda or anything. We're not going to take any action because we can't, but we might take action in the future. Is anybody who'd like to address us on anything? And seeing no one moving, we'll go to liaison assignments, and I feel like it's Loris this week.
Okay. Well, let's see some highlights. Thursday, Marty and I both attended the Story County Economic Development Group, and Progress Industries is the group that has this grant to look at rural employment-related transportation, and Amanda Sharp came in and just had a dialogue for about 10-15 minutes was asked some questions. It was a little slow because I don't think that people were really thinking about it. This is the type of thing where you need to really kind of start thinking, and then you remember this example or that example. But there was some good feedback, and so that was good. Last week I went to Ames's public input sessions on the change in how they're going to determine occupancy. And I did sit through for both the land, the one related to landowners, and the then later some homeowners, the residents came in, the neighborhood associations. And I felt that it was just good for me to spend the time listening, because whatever is decided or not decided, maybe they'll do nothing, I do believe will impact us down the road when we look at what may be transferring out into the more rural areas for housing in the future, because how they go ahead and make those decisions as far as occupancy will affect affordable housing, I believe. So I just attended there, and then I want to remind everyone that the Boone Story for Early Childhood Development Group is having a ribbon cutting at 4:30 today at the Human Services Center in Ames on the second floor, and that's to recognize that they've joined a partnership with the Chamber Buddies program. Other than that, my week is down in Des Moines the rest of it, I think, with you guys at least part of the time for the Iowa Association of Counties annual meetings.
Marty.
Quickly, United Way got a component of my week. Crestview is involving the DNR.
Yes.
Is taking an oversized presence in that success. Mass casualty exercise is turning into a whole lot of small details in the background that we hope we have a document we never use. Economic development clearly is, oh, it's a good meeting. I think that there are some communities make more out of it than others. And we have some sundry things that touch upon our office that fall into our laps and we deal with. So, and I've got another meeting at 12, so I'm sure.
And we're going to make it too. Laura mentioned the ISAC the next few days. Tomorrow at 2 p.m., our very dear friend Wayne Clinton receives the Golden Eagle Award from ISAC for his longtime contribution, not only to Story County, but to Iowa in total. And we're all really, really proud, really, really proud of Wayne. If there's nothing else, I'd take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Adjourn. Thanks, everybody.